Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, presented by your local Hyundai dealers. This is Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. And Odyssey Station.
The Score!
Starting the final hour of Hit and Run, right here on The Score, with our guy Chris Kamka. He helps us get Cam connected. He is a walking, living, breathing baseball smile. And Chris Kamka, the Sultan of Stat from NBC Sports Chicago, joins us on the Circa Resort Casino Hotline. Circa Resort Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. What's up, Chris? Good morning.
What's up, Smeeze? Good to be back.
Nice. Nice to have you. Nice to be back. How's your morning going so far?
Not so bad. You ready for some baseball? It looks like no rain delay today, so that's always nice.
That is always nice. Do we have a White Sox lineup yet? Sean, he will look for us. I don't know if we're going to see Leury Garcia starting again, but that's not your problem, Chris.
I don't see any lineup posted yet.
Okay, so. Thank you very much. We do have a Cubs lineup. And can get that for you a little bit later on, but neither of those things are why you called, for God's sakes. Chris, what is tickling your fancy these days?
Well, we can talk about the Cubs lineup, and particularly who's been at the top of it. Christopher Morel, and he's been entrenched in the leadoff spot for the majority of his major league career so far. And, 36 games in, he has made 30 starts at the leadoff spot.
Hmm.
And that's kind of rare for a Cub to make at least 30 of his first 36 career major league games in the leadoff spot. The last three is a pretty interesting list.
Ooh, that's great. So hold on one second. These are the last three Cubs who started 30 of their first 36 career games at leadoff.
Yeah, at least 30. So Morel is one of them, obviously. And let's talk about the last two. What do you think?
Well, how do I have to go all the way back to Jerome Walton? or no?
Yeah, you do. That's it.
Okay.
All right. So he's the last one, and of course, Rookie of the Year. So that's good. And then the guy before him didn't win Rookie of the Year, but he's had honors that are even bigger than that.
Really? Did they throw Ernie Banks at the leadoff spot when he came up?
No, but he is in Cooperstown, just like Ernie. It's Lou Brock.
Oh, of course. Wow. Wow.
So, yeah, it's pretty interesting. I mean, because normally you don't see a guy settling into the leadoff spot right away once they hit the majors. Of course, we saw it yesterday as well with Lenin Sosa being in the leadoff spot. But I don't think he'll be there today. It's interesting to me because top of the order is a catalyst, and to put somebody up at the leadoff spot, it's quite a thing, and it's quite an honor for a guy just getting to the majors to be there, and seeing Morel there and thriving is pretty impressive. I mean, we don't know where this is going to go, but it's certainly promising so far. 22 game on base streak to start his major league career, and that's the longest since Rocco Baldelli's 24 in 2003.
That's a really interesting trio of names, isn't it? Because Brock, you understood, was fast as hell, and they put him there when they didn't really think about, you know, on base percentage, really, and sort of similar with Walton. They're like, all right, let's put a guy, make some contact, okay, that's good, and they're super fast. Now with everything we know about it, I would argue that one of the things that really matters about leadoff the most is the mindset of being able to handle it, you know, and their faith in the soft factors of that with Morel is getting rewarded. That's interesting.
Oh yeah, because I mean, the first time your team sees a pitcher on any given day, this is the guy to set the tone. This is the guy that's got to figure out what he's got today, you know, what he's throwing, how good he's got it. So, I mean, there's a lot of responsibility on the leadoff hitter, in my opinion.
Hmm. Yeah, no, I think there is. All right, that's good stuff. I like that one. And then the White Sox, what are you thinking on the Sox these days, Chris?
Well, on the Sox, there's one thing that's just, it's just the most frustrating thing about them recently is just, where's the long balls?
Five games.
Where are the home runs?
Five games
in a row.
Mm-hmm.
At home, no home runs. And did you know, the longest streak by the White Sox in their history at Guaranteed Rate Field / New Comiskey Park / U.S. Cellular Field with no home runs is 6. So they have a chance to tie that today. They did it twice in 1992. And it's alarming because this roster is, you know, looking at the names on the roster, they should be able to put the ball over the park. I mean, over the last 5 days, no home runs. They're the only team that hasn't homered over the last five games. There's been 183 home runs by 130 different players. Isak Paredes leading the parade with 5, and no White Sox. And you got to hit those home runs because you just can't expect to string together 5-6 singles at a time and expect to score runs. It's too hard to get hits in the majors this year. You've got to get some home runs once you have a couple guys on base.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. I wonder, any inkling as to what's going on in terms of a collective, or are we just dealing with, you know, specific guys not getting the elevation on a day-to-day basis? Because the batting average was good before this series, especially, you know, over the last like 30 days, the White Sox have been hitting the ball very hard, and the batting average is still pretty good overall over the last 30 days.
Well, it's tough because you want to say, okay, they're not drawing any walks this year. So you're thinking, you know, the approach is like, we're not waiting for our pitch to get it over the fence. But then at the same time, you see Jose Abreu this year, he doesn't even have double digits. But I love his approach this year. He's drawn walks more than ever before, and that's really valuable. I mean, to me, it's like kind of one of the revelations this season is Jose Abreu's excellent eye at the plate. I mean, he is doing things. He's rarely striking out compared to before. He's walking more than ever. The power isn't there yet, but you love to see him grind it out. But he's even not hitting it over the fence. Vaughn, not really. You know, Robert, not yet. Nobody's got double-digit homers on this team. And you're kind of thinking, what's the deal? I mean, you know, you say, what is it, the weather? There's injuries. There's the nagging injuries, of course. That's got to be, you know, you can't miss that. You don't know what degree these guys are hurting. I mean, you gotta play nine guys every day. I mean, there's just injuries this season. It seems like I don't ever recall seeing it like this.
Yeah, it's pretty horrifying. And even for the guys that are playing, Chris Kempka, you're the best. Shohei Ohtani this week, ever see anything like that? No, because it's never happened. Eight RBIs one night, 13 Ks the next. It's pretty singular at this point.
Oh, it's phenomenal. Let's just celebrate it. You know, we love this sport, and this is something like we've never seen before. Just enjoy.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Thank you, Chris. Have a great day, man.
You too.
All right, you got it. It's Chris Kempka, the Sultan of Stat from NBC Sports Chicago. I love that dude. Yeah, it's kind of a brutal stretch of injuries, that's for sure, and a brutal stretch of guys who are playing who are told to take care of themselves. Switching gears for a little while here, when we do have a lineup, we will let you know. Tony La Russa is going to speak in a little bit, and we'll break down those kinds of things, what he says, what the lineup is and has been. We'll break that down with James Fegan of The Athletic before we get out of here. But I wanted to let you hear from Crane Kenny if you missed it yesterday. Crane Kenny on Inside the Clubhouse on the day that they signed the construction beam as they were building the new DraftKings sports book right there at the corner of Addison and Sheffield. Crane was on Inside the Clubhouse yesterday and was talking about that sports book. He says there's going to be a new giant TV. How big is the new giant TV? I want to know that's going to be in the sports book.
It's not one single television. It's kind of a gigantic ribbon board that kind of goes from sort of right field through center field to left field inside the building. And it'll allow us to have four or five different games on at one time, you know, so particularly around March Madness time when, you know, you've got three or four regionals playing at the same time. You can have all the games on. If it were something like the Super Bowl, you'd dedicate all the screens to just the one game or the Kentucky Derby or something like that. So, it can be up to a 2,000-square-foot screen for just one game, but typically it will be broken up into multiple games. And, you know, we think it's just another great amenity on campus. So the hotel was a nice lift for the campus, as was Gallagher Way and the office building. And now we'll add a sports book for those who choose to partake.
So, yeah, it's going to be a classic sports book in that way with the giant crazy-ass screen and more stuff on campus, and that means money coming in. So where's that money going? Is it going back into the team or not? Because it doesn't right now, some people upset at the number 14 payroll in all of MLB.
All of these activities, all of them generate revenue that go back into the baseball budget. So the sports book will do the same thing. And, you know, this goes back to my time with Jim Hendry. It's sort of always been the same program, which is you generate as much revenue as you can. You obviously take care of your fixed expenses, so the labor and other expenses that, you know, go into running our operation. And we've been really fortunate. The Ricketts family, they're not a public company. They don't have to satisfy shareholders. They let us put every dollar that's not used in running the business back into the payroll. So as you point out, we had a lot of money left at the end of this year we didn't spend. All of that will roll over for next year. And again, we trust our baseball operations guys to make good decisions with those proceeds. And, you know, they'll either use them next year or down the line. But again, they stay inside the system. And I get it's boring. I keep saying this every year, but it's a closed loop. And, you know, when the time is right, we'll spend those resources to build a great team.
Interesting. So it's Crane Kenny talking about how the money is there. And it's been a choice from Jed Hoyer to not spend it this particular year, and says that they will spend it next year and that there will be more to spend next year based on some of the choices not made to spend this year. And that, look, I can see the sense in that. If your team is not ready to win, then just throwing money at it to be a little bit better, I could see that not making sense, but people want to make sure that when the time is right, that there will be the kind of spending and that you're not dealing with the classic decades and decades and decades long run of Tribune Company not spending on something because it is super successful. So why bother? that there's a lot of muscle memory cynicism going on with people that this team will never spend again, that the Ricketts will never spend again, because why would they? Now they've won, now they've got all their pretty stuff, now they'll just reap in the money and just let it exist as is. But you have to ask yourself, why would they do that? Why would they not spend when the opportunity does present itself to be great? Because they did spend when the opportunity did present itself during the 4 to 5 year window of the championship aspirations of that team. They spent poorly, but they did spend. Here's Crane Kenny talking about that.
Between 2016 and 2021, we rank fourth in all of baseball, only behind the Yankees, Dodgers, and just a smidge behind the Red Sox. So over our last championship window, when we were in that championship window, we were one of the top spenders in baseball. And during those 6 years, we tripped the CBT penalty 3 times, so including as late as in 2020. So like just 2 years ago, we were over the limit. That was a shortened season, obviously, but we were over the limit in 19 as well. So I think what we're, and I go back now through Sam Zell and all the way back through Tribune, like we're so lucky that we have an owner that lets us spend when the time is right. And again, over the last 6 years, we've been top four in baseball. Clearly this year we've taken a step back. And as I said, all the resources that weren't used that would have pushed us up the ladder on the payroll chart this year will go into next year's budget.
All right. So we'll see if that's the case, right? I mean, how will you feel? Those of you out there who have the well-earned cynicism of your fandom for decades and decades and the history of it, how will you feel if indeed they do spend next year? Will you still be angry? Will you still be angry that they chose not to this year? Because there's clearly dovetailing realities that went on. The decision to take $59 million off the books with the Yu Darvish contract is inarguably financially incentive. And it just was. It just was. But then everything else that came after that, sure seems like it was kind of right. You know, in terms of not investing in some of that core who they thought was going to be better. Did they wait too long? Yeah, probably. Did they get enough for Darvish? Not really. But the market was weird. We'll see how good Owen Casey is. He might end up being very good. But the baseball decisions and the financial decisions coalesced there. And as long as they coalesce back in the other direction, as things progress here, then I think you should feel okay about it. I understand not for this year. I get it. But we'll see what happens. I think they are going to spend very aggressively. And I think they're kind of locked into it now with the way that things have gone and the way that people feel and the way that they're talking about it. And it may be too early in terms of the overall plan and how it fits in with like when the young guys are going to be ready. But that's not the way you should do it anymore, is just kind of wait for the young core to be ready. That's the same. That's what you did the last time. I don't think that's what people want to see you do, and I don't think that it's appropriate or necessary to do it that way, to wait for the kids all to be ready at the same time. Doesn't have to happen that way anymore. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. Feel free to hop in on this.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the bathroom?
I feel like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything taken care of.
It took forever. And the worst part? Hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Crane Kenny stuff from yesterday. Any White Sox thoughts you want to squeeze in before we get out of here? And James Fegan from The Athletic at about 11:40. Keep it here on 670 The Score. It's Hit and Run.
Hit and Run, Sunday mornings, 9 a.m. to noon on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
The conversation was a little, I was a little upset from my end. I think I handled it not the best, but I thought I told him what I wanted to tell him. You got to be careful when things like that happen because you say the wrong thing and it deters people from wanting to like keep you around. So I try to be precise with my words and let him know that I was not happy with their decision. But I mean, you got to look at the big picture and what's best for the Cubs. It was the roster moves that they had to make, go from 14 to 13, and then at the end of the day, I covered innings for the bullpen. We had a fresh bullpen for a week, so it was a win-win for everybody, I think. And then getting back up quickly was a good thing for me. I mean, obviously, it'd make moves in other ways, but here I am again. I just continue on the move and all that kind of stuff, but I'm happy to be back here.
That is Adrian Sampson, who started for the Cubs in St. Louis yesterday and pitched pretty well. Talking about getting sent down after the relief outing he had a week ago today. He came in relief of Kyle Hendricks and was really, really good with like 4 2/3, struck out a big pile of people. It was great and immediately got sent down right after that because that was the day before they had to go down to 13 pitchers on the roster. And he didn't take it well, but interesting to hear him talk about how he had those conversations with the Cubs. It is 670. The Score is where you are. Matt Spiegel, it is Hit and Run, talking about all things. Remember I told you I wanted to talk about Dansby Swanson? Here's why I wanted to talk about Dansby Swanson, who is absolutely red hot for the Braves, the shortstop and top of the order hitter, usually hits second behind Acuna. He's going to be an all-star for the first time, just won a World Series last year. Dansby was pretty good at times last year and then started out this year terribly, terribly. And was in this horrific slump, and a member of the front office sent something down to the manager, and it was a picture, a side-by-side of a picture of Dansby Swanson's swing last year and his swing this year at the time that he was struggling. And the manager said, well, why don't you just go tell him? Totally cool, totally open communication. Manager said, you go tell him. So this member of the front office went over and said to Dansby, hey, man, can I show you this stuff? And he shows this to Dansby Swanson, and Dansby Swanson said, made me want to throw up. He saw that he was way off timing-wise as opposed to how he had been last year. And just this moment, he said, was it changed everything. Started swinging better, started feeling better. The numbers didn't come until the middle of May. Since the middle of May, Dansby Swanson's hitting about 358 since the middle of May. But this moment happened in late April when, because an organization was trying desperately to do anything they can, find any way, communicating as a whole, and making sure the players were armed with absolutely everything they could be armed with, they got a lot better. Dansby Swanson got a lot better. Braves organization is good at that under Alex Anthopoulos and through Brian Snitker, who is a partner with the front office. This is the way a team has to be run these days. You guys know that last year, middle of the season, the Braves' defense was awful in terms of defensive runs saved. And then they started shifting dramatically. They incorporated a whole bunch of data and of heat maps and shifting and all sorts of new positioning, transferred the way they'd been doing it, changed it forever last year. And that was part of their tear that they've gone on. And defensively, they are very, very good. Got to win in the margins, got to win as an organization, top to bottom. This is the way it has to happen these days in MLB, if you're going to get it done. And yes, the White Sox don't do it that way. There also is an incredible lack of accountability that's gone on. And we see it, and we know it, and it drives us crazy. And different things happen along the way. You're like, how can Joe McEwing be allowed to just make that send again and again and again and again with no real accountability? And then Tony says, yeah, that's kind of what we do. We're just aggressive like that. How can Daryl Boston be allowed to not help runners be the best versions of themselves on the base paths? See guys getting picked off. See guys trying to advance and making terrible outs on the bases. See Leury Garcia playing so out of position as an outfielder. Multiple at-bats, multiple innings of a game. And not have that be corrected by the outfield coach is Daryl Boston. So where's the accountability with those guys? Where's the accountability for players? Dallas Keuchel was DFA'd a month ago. Jim Margulis over at Sox Machine wrote up today how the accountability for White Sox is still limited to just words, other than Dallas Keuchel. That was a player who paid the price. Gavin Sheets at one point paid the price of his inactivity and his lack of success and went down to the minors, but then he's been back. Leury Garcia has a ridiculous number of plate appearances and at-bats and starts. And Tony La Russa is intent on telling you, proving to you that he is right about Leury Garcia. So he will keep playing him and say stuff about why you got to better watch. Like he said yesterday, the key was Leury's at-bats. You got to watch those at-bats. He really wants to prove to you that he's correct. And he will do so at the expense of what is the right thing for the organization on a day-to-day basis. And it's absolutely infuriating. We do have a White Sox lineup. Leury does not start for the first time in this series. After bad defense in center and then bad defense at short, when he went in front of Lenin Sosa yesterday, Lenin Sosa gets another start. He's hitting ninth. He's not hitting leadoff. He's hitting ninth. He went 0-for-5 yesterday, but he does get the chance to start again. White Sox lineup is as follows. Tim Anderson at short. Andrew Vaughn is the DH. Then Luis Robert, Jose Abreu, Gavin Sheets is your right fielder hitting fifth. Jake Berger in the lineup. Josh Harrison playing left field. No A.J. Pollock in this lineup. Sebi Zavala is your catcher. And then Lenin Sosa as the Sox try not to get swept by the Baltimore Orioles today. Orioles, again, 18-15 in their last 33 games. That's since the call-up of former number one overall pick Adley Rutschman. They are turning a corner in their rebuild, and we are the ones watching it at the White Sox expense. Stan is in Bellwood and is now on Hit and Run. Good morning, Stan.
Hey, Speaks. How are you, buddy?
I am good, man. I'm good. Good morning.
You know what? Talking about Tony La Russa Speaks gives me a headache. I was prepared not to do it today. You're spoiling my. You already spoiled my breakfast by telling me that Josh Harrison is playing left field today. You know, good news is Lurie Garcia is taking a seat today.
Mm-hmm.
But that's another La Russa hallmark of playing players out of position. I mean, I can't take it. But anyway. Just to get away from that for a second, you made a very good point earlier, well-taken point when you made the analogy between the Cubs and the Sox and the happiness and joy that Pirates fans and Orioles fans are experiencing these days. You know, at the sight of these very talented young players that have been developed and have come up to the major league level. I hear you there. O'Neill Cruz, outstanding. He looks like a potential superstar. And also that it's not going to take too long. I mean, he already looks like a player. You know what I mean?
Well, O'Neill Cruz is crazy special, Stan. He hits the ball harder than Giancarlo Stanton sometimes. He throws it across the diamond harder than Carlos Correa sometimes. He runs faster than Jazz Chisholm. He's like this crazy collection of skills. I have heard that there are times when he's playing the game that he could go 4, 5, 6 days in a row where you're watching O'Neill Cruz and you're like, man, does that guy even care about what he's doing? Like, I've heard that in terms of his attention and his focus, but he's a young player, and we'll see if the big leagues helps lock that in.
Yeah. But I want to talk about the Orioles here.
Okay.
They're in last place, Speaks, basically because, you know, they've developed, and all these guys are homegrown for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
In order for them, they're in last place, obviously. But they don't have a last place roster. The Sox can thank their lucky stars that they compete in the AL Central, and the Orioles compete in the East. You know, the Orioles are going to have to develop some pitchers here before they can actually move up in that division, because the rest of those teams, with the exception maybe of the Red Sox, have pitchers. But it struck me, you know, watching these games the last couple of days, that the Orioles, for the most part, put a better player on the field at almost every position than the White Sox do. You know, if Mateo was with the White Sox, he'd be playing second base. That much I know. Mm. I'm not so sure that I wouldn't rather have Cedric Mullins than Luis Robert. Austin Hayes and Santander would be starters on the White Sox, clearly. Mm. And if I had Mountcastle on the White Sox, he'd be my first baseman, and Jose Abreu would go right to the trading block. I would rather have these position players at the Orioles. You know, the White Sox, not only they went to the offseason last year needing to upgrade at second base, right field, and catcher.
And they still do. They got Reese McGuire, but thank you for the call, Stan. I mean, Adley Rutschman is a terrific two-way player, obviously former number one pick. And Santander, Trey Mancini, Hayes, Mullins, Mateo. Yeah, there's a bunch of dudes there who you're looking at and you think might be better. That should tell you something. That is a bad sign. At 670 The Score, we'll wrap things with James Fegan from The Athletic coming up next.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Robert broke his bat and he skies it to right center field. It's a slide for Hayes and he can't make the play. You wanted to see Sosa run. He's on his way home and the Sox have tied this game on the feet of Lenin Sosa.
I love the fact that he aggressively kept on coming, and when the ball was kicked away, Joe McEwing pretty much says, go get him.
It is 6-7 in the score. That a rare highlight from the White Sox Orioles series. James Fegan's tweet, just kind of talking about the state of things with the White Sox after the third loss yesterday, ended with James, I believe it said, "It's rough out here." It's, as James joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Out here, was that the ballpark? Was it your mentions on Twitter? Was it where was it rough at that moment?
I mean, the mentions are always kind of bad. I don't really like personalize that very much. I think some beat reporters kind of freak out when everyone's negative, but like it's not about me, so I tend to compartmentalize. I was more thinking about like this team is frustrated, it wants to win, and things are not going right, and they've been waiting 70 games at this point to kind of get on the run that they, you know, everyone's anticipated, everyone says they're capable of doing, but has not happened for going on 3 months now. So I think that was more front of mind.
Yeah, no, that makes all the sense in the world. It is 70 games. We're 11 games away from the halfway point. And this is what they are. Unfortunately, do you think there is something else coming to try and give a jolt? Because they've pushed a lot of buttons. I mean, they haven't pushed the manager button and the coaches button, but we got the young kid up, and nice to see him in the lineup again today. I was a little worried about that. Do you get the sense that they will push other major buttons if need be this year?
Not particularly. Like, I think there's probably the intent, at least at this point, with competition still relatively in range of, you know, trade deadline additions. So, and maybe I think they have a bit more capital than they did this time last year in terms of what they can move. Though I don't know if they're willing to, like, you know, start fencing some of their top prospects that might have some real, you know, value in extending their window down the road. But I think they're more the mindset of our big button. You know, I think it's the thing everyone hates to hear about, like, you know, the guy coming back from injury is a deadline addition. But I think part of their assessment of the team is this needs a Menez. This needs a healthy and functioning Grandal. This needs a healthy and functioning Moncada as their big move. I would be surprised by some sort of in-season move like that. I think when they get to that point, that kind of would be a big acknowledgement that they're just not set up to succeed the way they plan to this year, and that they need to make some sort of big systemic changes. And frankly, you know, you fire a coach, you fire a manager mid-season, you can't really get the big replacement or jolt, the kind of hiring process to really make a systemic fix like that until the off-season. So it's really more of a shot across the bow when you do something like that, and you can only fire it once. So I don't know how much value they really see in doing that, or how much it would really turn around things, as much as it might be just cathartic or acknowledging something is blatantly wrong. And yeah, I just don't have the feeling that that's what's coming or at the measure that, you know, this front office would do.
Yeah, no, it doesn't feel like it's coming. It doesn't, and that's it ends up leading to a lack of spirit among the fan base that I'm sure you see, which is why, folks, frankly, it's rough out here. Are you surprised to see Lenin Sosa in the lineup today after the way that Tony spoke about it? You had the quote where he kind of was encouraging, but also said that you got to watch Leury's at bats, that kind of thing. I figured he was a no for today.
I think it's about, well, you kind of mentioned Lenin as like the button they're pushing, and it seems like that's not really the case. It's more about roster need.
Yeah.
But I think today is also about roster need. You know, the fact is that they were weighing whether Leury or Josh Harrison would play in the outfield, and Leury's been dealing with, like, you know, this kind of side discomfort as well. I don't think it's so much as like Lenin Sosa is like being taking over Leury's spot or pushing him down the depth chart as much as they're thinking like they're trying to rest guys and Lenin is what they kind of need right now. I mean, the fact that they're even talking about Garcia or Harrison in left field is about Pollock being sore. And, you know, I talked to Andrew Vaughn pregame about how he's managing it, and he's kind of on DH duty only, or DH or first base going forward. And then that's part of the equation as well. So I don't see this as so much as like, let's give Lenin some extended run and have him take over position, as much as, you know, we got a lot of sore bodies and, you know, they trust him as much as, you know, as anyone else they'd call up. And I think, you know, the way Tony speaks highly of him, you know, it's similar to what they talked about with highly spoke highly of Vaughn and Berger before those guys become everyday guys. But as we've seen, that's a slow process of getting into that circle of everyday trust for him. And that's a process that even more highly touted guys like Vaughn went through. So it's going to happen for Lanine as well, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense. What's our count now of guys with sore legs, and how are yours, James?
Mine are great because I haven't done anything resembling workout in 3 days. But once I jog for like literally 4 miles, I'll be out of commission once again. It was 5 out of 9 for the lineup yesterday, I think. Wow. And I think it's in a similar place. And the fact that, you know, Pollock is getting a game off kind of speaks to how significant it is with him. I think the pleasant surprise today is that Tim Anderson is playing, because when you hear the coaching staff like passing doubt on it a day beforehand, usually that winds up going, side to side of caution. So the fact that he's feeling good enough that they just had to give him one day off, a day game after a night game, that's more positive, because obviously they need him at every moment, every time, as much as that's an unreasonable thing to ask for a guy coming off groin injury. He's just so essential for an offense that's struggling.
Yeah, you know, it's just such a tough moment optically and with the circumstances when you haven't homered in 5 games and your fast guys are genuinely being told not to run fast. It's like it's just a tricky spot. Does it feel out of the baseball ordinary for players to be getting this advice, or do you think they've gotten this kind of advice before and we just haven't noticed because there's so many of them right now?
I don't think it's out of the baseball ordinary for it on an individual level, especially not with like someone like Tim coming off a significant injury the way he did, or someone being told, like, hey, let's not aggravate this. But the fact that it's so widespread is more like when I was, contacting other beat writers yesterday, like, hey, have you ever heard anything like this? Is this normal? Have you had a team that had this kind of stretch? I think it's more just how systemic it is, and that's really where, the questions about like what's going on, why are we not, why is this team not healthy on a broad level, that need to be asked. And that was something that Han, we asked him a lot about it, this past when the last spoke before the start of this homestand, and he said like, it's might not really get better because the conditions that created this were so many guys dealing with leg soreness, the weird string training, the weird off season where you couldn't contact your players. Those kind of circumstances are baked into this entire year. And, he obviously changed the strength and conditioning, chief before the season. It's now Goldie Simmons, but, he was defending it as the idea of like this. He wasn't really able to enact a long-term plan or the kind of systemic changes he'd be able to do because he got the job in November and then, couldn't talk to any of his players for several months and then had a short spring training. So I think the wages of that are going to be spent, all season. Han's position is that you couldn't really weigh what he's able to do off this year because he hasn't had the proper opportunity to do it. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean anything better for this very, very important contending season and their contention window kind of seemingly being at risk right now. But that's where they're saying they're at.
Mm. Man, it doesn't feel encouraging. This isn't working. James, try again. Let's see. Where else can we go here? Oh, Eloy Jimenez is playing. Charlotte, right? He's DHing today in Charlotte?
He is DHing again. He DHed last night. I think this would be his 5th game since being restarted. So, obviously, playing the field and feeling good and doing it multiple days, back-to-back days. And then, maybe at some point looking like the offensive monster he was in 2020. Are steps there yet to go, but it's something up there. But frankly, with that, Yamakata is probably coming back Tuesday, but seeing this offense at full strength and in rhythm, not just like back on the roster, since we know those things are not the same from watching the team this year, still feels like it's a couple of weeks away, which is rough. Obviously, the schedule is not as rough as it was, but as this weekend has shown, that doesn't matter if you're not playing well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. One or two more minutes here with James Fagan. Appreciate the time before the game. All right, so you did such a good job documenting Lucas Giolito's transformation, and some of it was based on pitch selection and sequencing and getting things to tunnel together, like that fastball and the changeup. Does he need to rethink the way he attacks hitters after this stretch, is he ready to rethink that, rethink sequence and attack plan at this point?
I think he's more of the mindset of I need to get everything back to where it was. I don't think he feels like he's throwing the way he was in 2019 and it's not working anymore. Talking to Katz in Houston, it was very much like, we need to get his fastball characteristic to what it was. It's lost some spin. It's lost some ride. There's something about the way it's coming out, or his arm not, his mechanics as far as his arm action being a little bit too tight and not as fluid as it was, that he's not getting the same kind of carry on it. Because, you know, I think you can look back his entire, you know, last 3 years, even, you know, if people want to talk about, you know, or Josh Donaldson wants to mention the sticky stuff, like, he was still at the same spin rate, same ride after that, pretty much afterwards. It was not the kind of drop that he's seen this season. So I think they're more of the action of, if we get his fastball behaving the way it was, everything is going to play off of it the way that it used to. You know, there are little tweaks in here and there, but that's the big systemic thing that they feel like is not where it needs to be. It's not like we got the same Lucas Giolito, but we're getting diminishing returns. If we need to get back to the old Lucas Giolito on a mechanical basis.
Got you. And then where are we on Liam Hendricks in terms of time frame? We spoke to him the other day, and he's trying to be aggressive and says he wants to work faster than what they diagnosed. But him being back would do a lot in terms of pushing Joe Kelly or Kendall Graveman maybe into the seventh inning instead of waiting for the eighth.
Right. I think that's, you know, a good point. Essentially, that they're kind of operating like they have the two really shut down relievers, and that allows them less flexibility to kind of, especially with the way, more traditional way Tony operates the bullpen, of, you know, being a little helpless until the eighth inning. Liam's been throwing. I don't think there's any minute setbacks. I don't think there's anything to move past the kind of July 1st standpoint that he is. I haven't seen a kind of like max effort bullpen or anything like that yet, but, you know, that could be coming this road trip with the way he's kind of operating. It doesn't seem like there's been any real issues, and really at the time it happened, you know, talking to new people around him, is that, you know, this was viewed as more maintenance, or let's not make this thing worse in the middle of June, than it was like some big flare-up that they're worried about costing him like significant time or the season, or threatening him down the road. As much as he revealed like every worrisome like nick that he's picked up over the course of his career, and just kind of threw that, I've had a partially torn UCL for 15 years, a detail that I'm sure calmed everyone down. They feel pretty normal about this.
James, thank you so much, man. Enjoy the day, and I hope it gets less rough out there.
That'd be nice. You know, talking to happy people once a day every now and then would be a good change of pace.
Good luck. Send them my way if you do. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. That's James Fegan from The Athletic joining us right there on 670 The Score. We have been broadcasting to you live from the Scores Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Congratulations, by the way, to the Chicago Wolves, who have won their fifth championship overall, their third Calder Cup. Very, very cool. And nice to be in a town where there's some winners every once in a while. The Wolves, the Sky. We'll stop there for now. Thank you to Jordan Bastian from MLB.com and to James Fegan from The Athletic. Thank you to Sean Sears, who did a great job producing the show. Thank you to the callers, the listeners, the texters for being here and being a part of Hit and Run on a Sunday morning. I'll be back with you next week for sure. Cody Decker coming up next with Down the Line. And then it's Cubs baseball, Alec Mills and Jack Flaherty at about 12:40 will be pregame. Cody's next right here on 670 The Score. Have a great day, everybody. Tell you something. That is a bad sign. At 670 The Score, we'll wrap things with James Fegan from The Athletic coming up next.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Robert broke his bat and he skies it to right center field. It's a slide for Hayes and he can't make the play. You wanted to see Sosa run. He's on his way home and the Sox have tied this game on the feet of Lenin Sosa.
I love the fact that he aggressively kept on coming, and when the ball was kicked away, Joe McEwing pretty much says, go get him.
It is 670 The Score. That a rare highlight from the White Sox Orioles series. James Fegan's tweet just kind of talking about the state of things with with the White Sox after the third loss yesterday ended with, James, I believe it said, "It's rough out here." It's, as James joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book, out here, was that the ballpark? Was it your mentions on Twitter? Was it where was it rough at that moment?
I mean, the mentions are always kind of bad. I don't really, like, personalize that very much. I think some beat reporters kind of freak out when everyone's negative, but, like, it's not about me, so I tend to compartmentalize. I was more thinking about, like, this team is frustrated, it wants to win, and it, things are not going right, and they've been waiting 70 games at this point to kind of get on the run that they, you know, everyone's anticipated, everyone says is, they're capable of doing, but has not happened for going on 3 months now. So I think that was more front of mind.
Yeah, no, that makes all the sense in the world. It is 70 games. We're 11 games away from the halfway point, and this is what they are. Unfortunately, do you think there is something else coming to try and give a jolt? Because they've pushed a lot of buttons. I mean, they haven't pushed the manager button and the coaches button, but we got the young kid up, and nice to see him in the lineup again today. I was a little worried about that. Do you get the sense that they will push other major buttons if need be this year?
Not particularly. Like, I think there's probably the intent, at least at this point, with competition still relatively in range of, you know, trade deadline additions, though, and maybe I think they have a bit more capital than they did this time last year in terms of what they can move, though I don't know if they're willing to, like, you know, start fencing some of their top prospects that might have some real, you know, value in extending their window down the road. But I think they're more the mindset of our big buttons. You know, I think it's the thing everyone hates to hear about, like, you know, the guy coming back from injury is a deadline addition. But I think part of their assessment of the team is, this needs a Menez. This needs a healthy and functioning Grandal. This needs a healthy and functioning Moncada as their big move. I would be surprised by some sort of in-season move like that. I think when they get to that point, that kind of would be a big acknowledgement that they're just not set up to succeed the way they plan to this year, and that they need to make some sort of big systemic changes. And frankly, you know, you fire a coach, you fire a manager mid-season, you can't really get the big replacement or jolt, the kind of hiring process to really make a systemic fix like that until the off season. So it's really more of a shot across the bow when you do something like that, and you can only fire it once. So I don't know how much value they really see in doing that, or how much it would really turn around things, as much as it might be just cathartic or acknowledging something is blatantly wrong. And yeah, I just don't have the feeling that that's what's coming, or that's the measure that, you know, this front office would do.
Yeah, no, it doesn't feel like it's coming. It doesn't, and that's it ends up leading to a lack of spirit among the fan base that I'm sure you see, which is why, folks, frankly, it's rough out here. Are you surprised to see Lenin Sosa in the lineup today after the way that Tony spoke about it? You had the quote where he kind of was encouraging, but also said that you got to watch Leury's at bats, that kind of thing. I figured he was a no for today.
I think it's about, well, you kind of mentioned Lenin as like the button they're pushing, and it seems like that's not really the case. It's more about roster need.
Yeah.
But I think today is also about roster need. You know, the fact is that they were weighing whether Leury or Josh Harrison would play in the outfield, and Leury's been dealing with, like, you know, this kind of side discomfort as well. I don't think it's so much as like Lenin Sosa is like being taking over Larry's spot or pushing him down the depth chart as much as they're thinking like they're trying to rest guys and Lenin is what they kind of need right now. I mean, the fact that they're even talking about Garcia or Harrison in left field is about Pollock being sore. And, you know, I talked to Andrew Vaughn pregame about how he's managing it, and he's kind of on DH duty only, or DH or first base going forward. And then that's part of the equation as well. So I don't see this as so much as, like, let's give Lenin some extended run and have him take over position, as much as, you know, we got a lot of sore bodies and, you know, they trust him as much as, you know, as anyone else they call up. And I think, you know, the way Tony speaks highly of him, you know, it's similar to what they talked about with how they spoke highly of Vaughn and Berger before those guys become everyday guys. But as we've seen, that's a slow process of getting into that circle of everyday trust for him. And that's a process that even more highly touted guys like Vaughn went through. So it's going to happen for Lenin as well, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense. What's our count now of guys with sore legs, and how are yours, James?
Mine are great because I haven't done anything resembling workout in 3 days. So once I jog for like literally 4 miles, I'll be out of commission once again. It was 5 out of 9 for the lineup yesterday, I think. Wow. And I think it's in a similar place. And the fact that, you know, Pollock is getting a game off kind of speaks to how significant it is with him. They float. I think the pleasant surprise today is that Tim Anderson is playing, because when you hear the coaching staff like passing doubt on it a day beforehand, usually that winds up going, set aside a caution. So the fact that he's feeling good enough that they just had to give him one day off, a day game after a night game, that's more positive, because obviously they need him at every moment, every time, as much as that's an unreasonable thing to ask for a guy coming off groin injury. He's just so essential for an offense that's struggling.
Yeah, you know, it's just such a tough moment optically and with the circumstances when you haven't homered in 5 games and your fast guys are genuinely being told not to run fast. It's like, it's just a tricky spot. Does it feel out of the baseball ordinary for players to be getting this advice, or do you think they've gotten this kind of advice before and we just haven't noticed because there's so many of them right now?
I don't think it's out of the baseball ordinary for it on an individual level, especially not with like someone like Tim coming off a significant injury the way he did, or someone being told, like, hey, let's not aggravate this. But the fact that it's so widespread is more like when I was, contacting other beat writers yesterday, like, hey, have you ever heard anything like this? Is this normal? Have you had a team that had this kind of stretch? I think it's more just how systemic it is, and that's really where, the questions about like what's going on, why are we not, why is this team not healthy on a broad level, that need to be asked. And that was something that Han, we asked him a lot about it, this past when the last spoke before the start of this homestand. He said, like, yeah, it's might not really get better because the conditions that created this, where so many guys dealing with leg soreness, the weird spring training, the weird off season where you couldn't contact your players, those kind of circumstances are baked into this entire year. And, he obviously changed the strength and conditioning, chief before the season. It's now Goldie Simmons, but, he was defending it as the idea of like this. He wasn't really able to enact a long-term plan or the kind of systemic changes he'd be able to do because he got the job in November and then, couldn't talk to any of his players for several months and then had a short spring training. So I think the wages of that are going to be spent, all season. Han's position is that you couldn't really weigh what he's able to do off this year because he hasn't had the proper opportunity to do it. Now, that doesn't mean anything better for this very, very important contending season and their contention window kind of seemingly being at risk right now. But that's where they're saying they're at.
Man, it doesn't feel encouraging. This isn't working. James, try again. Let's see. Where else can we go here? Oh, Eloy Jimenez is playing. Charlotte, right? He's DHing today in Charlotte?
He is DHing again. He DH'd last night. I think this would be his 5th game since being restarted. So, obviously, playing the field and feeling good and doing it multiple days, back-to-back days. And then, maybe at some point looking like the offensive monster he was in 2020. Are steps there yet to go, but it's something up there. But frankly, with that, Yamakata is probably coming back Tuesday, but seeing this offense at full strength and in rhythm, not just like back on the roster, since we know those things are not the same from watching the scene this year, still feels like it's a couple of weeks away, which is rough. Obviously, the schedule is not as rough as it was, but as this weekend, it shows that doesn't matter if you're not playing well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. One or two more minutes here with James Fegan. Appreciate the time before the game. All right, so you did such a good job documenting Lucas Giolito's transformation, and some of it was based on pitch selection and sequencing and getting things to tunnel together, like that fastball and the changeup. Does he need to rethink the way he attacks hitters after this stretch, is he ready to rethink that, rethink sequence and attack plan at this point?
I think he's more of the mindset of I need to get everything back to where it was. I don't think he feels like he's throwing the way he was in 2019 and it's not working anymore. I think, talking to Katz in Houston, it was very much like we need to get his fastball characteristic to what it was. It's lost some spin. It's lost some ride. There's something about the way it's coming out, or his arm not, his mechanics as far as his arm action being a little bit too tight and not as fluid as it was, that he's not getting the same kind of carry on it. Because, you know, I think he can look back his entire, you know, last 3 years, even, you know, if people want to talk about, you know, or Josh Johnson wants to mention the sticky stuff, like, he was still at the same spin rate, same ride after that, pretty much, afterwards. It was not the kind of drop that he's seen this season. So, I think they're more of the action of, if we get his fastball behaving the way it was, everything is going to play off of it the way that it used to. You know, there are little tweaks in here and there, but that's the big systemic thing that they feel like is not where it needs to be. It's not like we got the same Lucas Giolito, but we're getting diminishing returns. If we need to get back to the old Lucas Giolito on a mechanical basis.
Got you. And then where are we on Liam Hendricks in terms of time frame? We spoke to him the other day, and he's trying to be aggressive and says he wants to work faster than what they diagnosed. But him being back would do a lot in terms of pushing Joe Kelly or Kendall Graveman maybe into the seventh inning instead of waiting for the eighth.
Right. I think that's, you know, a good point. Essentially, that they're kind of operating like they have the two really shut down relievers, and that allows them less flexibility to kind of, especially with the way, more traditional way Tony operates the bullpen of, you know, being a little helpless until the eighth inning. Mm-hmm. Liam's been throwing. I don't think there's any minute setbacks. I don't think there's anything to move past the kind of July 1st standpoint that he is. I haven't seen a kind of like max effort bullpen or anything like that yet, but, you know, that could be coming this road trip with the way he's kind of operating. It doesn't seem like there's been any real issues, and really at the time it happened, you know, talking to new people around him is that, you know, this is viewed as more maintenance, or let's not make this thing worse in the middle of June, than it was like some big flare up that they're worried about costing him like significant time or the season or threatening him down the road. As much as he revealed like every worrisome like nick that he's picked up over the course of his career, and just kind of threw that, I've had a partially torn UCL for 15 years, a detail that I'm sure calmed everyone down. They feel pretty normal about this.
James, thank you so much, man. Enjoy the day, and I hope it gets less rough out there.
That'd be nice. You know, talking to happy people once a day every now and then would be a good change of pace.
Good luck. Send them my way if you do. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. That's James Fegan from The Athletic joining us right there on 670 The Score. We have been broadcasting to you live from the Scores Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Congratulations, by the way, to the Chicago Wolves, who have won their fifth championship overall, their third Calder Cup. Very, very cool. And nice to be in a town where there's some winners every once in a while. The Wolves, the Sky. We'll stop there for now. Thank you to Jordan Bastion from MLB.com and to James Fegan from The Athletic. Thank you to Sean Sears, who did a great job producing the show. Thank you to the callers, the listeners, the texters for being here and being a part of Hit and Run on a Sunday morning. I'll be back with you next week for sure. Cody Decker coming up next with Down the Line. And then it's Cubs baseball. Alec Mills and Jack Flaherty at about 12:40 will be pregame. Cody's next right here on 670 The Score. Have a great day, everybody.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.